extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle. Back in the dark, where you can't see him, but we can in the group chat, is producing Anders. It's a big day. It's a wonderful day. It's an incredible busy time coming up for us and all of you. World Cup qualifying coming. We're going to wrap up week four today. We're already a month into the MLS season. U.S. Open Cup starts this week. There's so much going on, but I want to start with this. Shout out to my guys, Henry and Tony in Kansas City, who gave me big time capital with the wife. She thinks I just sit down here in my basement and basically do nothing all day, which is not entirely untrue, but in having Henry and Tony here in Kansas City say, hey, I listened to the show, it proved to Mindy that it's not all a complete waste of time.
So did you wait? Did you? Are Henry and Tony people you invited to your house to explain to Mindy that you have a real job?
No. Henry and Tony did it on their own. I didn't even have to bribe them. I didn't pay them a dollar. They just popped up in our lives, in our day-to-day, and just said, hey, really enjoy the show, man.
Well, like at the grocery store?
No. Well, we got some ice cream on Friday night. Henry helped us out and happened to mention that, not only is he a big ETR guy, he's a big Wichita Wings guy, which, he drilled his way straight into the middle of my heart, to the core there. And then we're having brunch, and Tony comes up and says, hey, really enjoy the show. So there's the community out in the wild here in Kansas City. Two sightings in one weekend, giving me legitimacy where I previously had very little. So it's wonderful for me.
Wow.
Real political capital with the wife.
We got an email from a fan going to KC in a week or two for a game who asked if you'd be there and want to meet up. So
I will be here.
Do it again.
Meeting up is difficult for me. I have two children.
You should pretend that one's casual, that you didn't
plan. That's a good point. somebody just walked down the driveway to have a barbecue with us. Big time. Look, but it is a big week for us. Thanks to Henry and Tony and all you out there. The reason we do this show and it's enjoyable is, one, because we get to spend time around each other twice a week talking about soccer, which we love. But two, there's nothing that I enjoy more than hearing from somebody that this show is something in their life, whether it's important or unimportant, or on Mondays, they're like, hey, yo, 5 p.m. Eastern, where's this at? I have podcasts, I have shows, I have things I set my life around. And to hear that some of you do the same with Extra Time is, it's awesome. Look, watch along shows coming for the World Cup qualifiers. We've changed our format a little bit. We're going to have DeMarcus Beasley on during US-Mexico with us, live on Twitch, live on YouTube Live, the MLS channels on both of those. We'll send out the links, the promo material, but come join us. Come hang out. Have it be a second screen. I cannot wait to see how Run-DMB reacts to moments in the game, but also what stories that we can pull out of him. And we'll do these watch-alongs for every single US and Canada game, I think all the way through the World Cup. We're changing things up a little bit. Everybody's got a post-game show, and we still do, but we'll be through a pre-game as well as during the game as well. How you feeling, Doyle? I saw some of your tweets over the course of the last couple days or so, and it's a little bit...
I think I went to sleep last night and Doyle was starting a thread, and I woke up and it was an essay.
It feels a little bit fraught. So lay back on the couch here and just tell us how you're feeling, man.
I feel miserable. I feel pretty miserable. World Cup qualifying is just absolutely brutal, and I keep going through... in my mind, remembering the moments that this group of players or the coach kind of left points on the board by overcomplicating things, not finishing chances, giving away a couple of bad goals, and put this team in a situation where, it's a good situation, right? Like, win at home against Panama and you are no worse than fourth place. That fourth place game is a one-game playoff in Qatar, likely against New Zealand. That is a game where the U.S. would be strong favorites. But it's also a one-game playoff, so it would be nerve-wracking as all hell. There were a lot of moments where it could have gone different. And so I'm miserable thinking about that, and then I'm miserable thinking about what's to come, because this is, by any measure, this is the U.S.'s toughest window. At the Azteca to open, at Costa Rica to close, in the middle, home game against a Panama team that has been playing with a level of intensity that the U.S. has only shown the ability to reach against Mexico.
It's not great. It's not great. It's not terrible. It's not terrible. The U.S. still controls their own destiny.
But the U.S. controlled their own destiny after winning against Panama at home 4 years ago as well. And the percentages were in their favor. And they had a much easier road game in that particular window than either of the road games they're facing in this particular window.
The fan fiction Twitter thread is really what got me. Of just like, well, but what if this is out? This is if they win this game, but then Costa Rica could win this, and then we would lose, and then we would be out. And what am I doing? It's 4 a.m. I can't sleep.
Math is math. Math is math. Costa Rica and Panama have two home games in this window. Costa Rica's road game is at El Salvador, who are already eliminated. Panama's home, a road game is at Honduras, who are already eliminated. It is not at all wild to think that Costa Rica and Panama will have taken 6 points from each of their first two games heading into that final round.
I want you to know, you heard it. You heard the buzzer in David's apartment.
The buzzer.
You are speaking something into reality that you should leave. That you should not say out loud. Should be completely silent.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about CCL because that'll never disappoint us.
I mean, what a flipping of sort of like roles and expectations where Canada's just sitting back, just like, yeah, we good. This is gonna be fine. We're going to the World Cup. Don't worry about it. We'll get these results. We're relaxed, and we are all just like on edge, just shaking days in advance. Like, don't play. Yeah, don't try to beat. Don't try to beat Mexico.
Since Kalen Carr's not here because he's sent you a flight and he's somewhere, I don't know, on a different continent at all times. My shameless plug is on MLS Today on Monday. You can listen to it as a podcast if you missed it. We had Michael Singh on, and he just casually mentioned at some point when we qualify on Sunday. Like, not if, when. Because if they don't beat Costa Rica or get the points they need against Costa Rica, they face an eliminated Jamaica at BMO Field on Sunday. It's a foregone conclusion for them. And at worst right now, if everything went wrong, they'd be in fourth. And it was like, oh man, what a casual flex to just be able to say the word when and not if, and just be cruising and chilling. It sucks.
It's the start of a stressful, 9 days or so? Yeah. March 30th. That's when it all concludes. We'll be doing the live shows. We're doing the watch along. Sasha Kleshin's going to join us on that 30th to watch all those games at the same time and experience it together. So if you are thinking, boy, I just don't think I can sit at home by myself or whatever it might be and experience that misery alone, join us. All of the emotions will be on the table for those watch along shows on the 24th, 27th, and the 30th. By the way, on the 27th, U.S. and Canada don't play at the same time, so we'll be going live for 4 hours straight. It's going to be really fun. Tune in for that. We will also have a World Cup preview pod with more, hopefully, maybe positive or, you know, less emotional discussion coming up on Wednesday. So we'll have an early ETR for you on that one. And by the way, on Thursday, we're going to have a show with Charles Alcheck and Ollie Curtis, all about MLS Next Pro. I have a ton of questions. I'm sure everybody at home has a ton of questions about the league, about what it's going to be, about what they want it to be, or what it will be in year one. We will ask Charles and Ali all of those questions and try to get that established for you. Real quick, before we jump into things today, U.S. Open Cup is back this week. I know we all love that tournament. It's been a while. I mean, look, you can watch the likes of Oyster Bay United and the Villages and Defeaters Kick Soccer Club. And when I say Defeaters, I don't mean like the way you spell defeat. I mean D'FEETERS. It's just a wonderful thing. Maybe the biggest matchup, Minneapolis City SC, who were disqualified a couple of years ago but have a pretty big profile for a lower league team. And League Two Natty champions Des Moines Menace are taking each other on. So tune in ESPN Plus and the U.S. Soccer YouTube page this week.
And do me a favor, if you're in the Northeast and you're looking for something to do on Tuesday night, I believe FC Motown is hosting a game. My guy Sachi Hot, head coach for that one. He's pumped about the Open Cup. I called one of their games a few years back. That was an epic one with, you know, the classic Julius James and R.J. Allen starting along the back line for
Gideon
them.
Baugh. Gideon Baugh is a Motown FC or FC Motown.
Open Cup
now.
Is always a gift, as you said. Yeah, we
here's
love
the
open
quote:
cup.
"The Open Cup is the most romantic part of the American game." That's from somebody participating this week. I could not agree more. All right, coming up today from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios, we're going to talk you through Week 4 from top to bottom, whether it be Charlotte FC's first ever win. Fueled by Swiderski, Carol Swiderski, what a game it was for him. Speaking of the World Cup qualifiers in the U.S., it's nice to have Jesus Ferreira scoring hat tricks and putting some of those finishing questions to bed. We'll talk through that. He's our U22 player of the weekend. And we'll take a closer look at maybe who has things to be concerned about so far. 4 weeks in, there are a couple teams that fall into that one. But look, shout out to our winner in our Extra Time Fantasy League, FC Asi Castello, who put up 119 points, and they're a genius. They looked at that schedule. They said, oh, I see Inter Miami, and Brandon Vasquez is on a heater. They captained Brandon Vasquez, who got two more goals this weekend. So congratulations to you there. Let's start with the best thing we saw in Week 4. Doyle, get us started.
What was the best thing I saw in Week 4? Oh, God. On Saturday night, Henry Kessler. It's more the best thing I heard. Susan and I were doing MLS After Dark on Saturday night, just running through the day's events on Twitter. And, like, Henry Kessler showed up in the listeners and then requested to be a speaker on the show. And so Susan invited him in. We had just been talking about the Revs, who had a very rough week. With that, fall on their face moment at the Azteca or at the Estadio Olimpico, I should say, in Mexico City against Pumas, and then losing 3-1 to Charlotte. I thought he came in a little bit hot, like he was taking exception to what we were saying, but then it turned out to be pretty milquetoast. So I thought we were going to get, you know, some of that Henry Kessler sauce that he apparently only saves for his tweets rather than his Twitter Spaces appearances, because he did have he threw a heater at Alejandro Bedoya. Because I like this, like Henry, like I'm recounting Henry Kessler's tweets right now, but he's basically trolling Ale Bedoya for running to pick up the ball for a late throw in, because of the events last year, when the Union played the Revs.
It was a
good way for a young player with a lot of potential to stay in the conversation, even as he's, recovering from injury.
If you're an MLS player or you're an MLS coach or you're an MLS personality or you have somebody with good takes, if you want to just request, we will say yes. We will invite you in. We will see what you have to say. Andrew Farrell, the legend, got that started. Dave, how about on the field? What'd you see you liked?
I liked a lot of things, to be clear. This was not an easy decision for me. But I think what I finally wrote down for mine was Shaqiri and Chicago Fire. Incredible start for them. Third in the East. They conceded their first goal, but the best defensive team in the league. And Shaqiri really found his feet in this one. He's been good all season. He really loves that left side, whether it's the connection with Herbers, the overlap there, or it's just him comfortable then coming back in on his right foot. But you saw him be dangerous. You saw him get the goal from the penalty spot, help set up Shabilko so that he got the goal. And an overall pretty dominant performance for the Chicago Fire, back-to-back wins, as I said, towards the top of the East. Edgar Hendrickson in his first year as a head coach getting back-to-back wins. And this is, it's wild to think how historic this start is and then the history that the Chicago Fire have, but it's been such a long time. So it's pretty great to see.
Loved the St. Vincent, the Grenadines flag that Ezra brought out, said it's like his lucky charms, has the Vinci heat with him on all times. He keeps it nice. Keeps it close, so that was pretty sweet. But it's great to see Ezra have a good start. Great chat with him that you can go back and listen to here on Extra Time. I'm going to say the best thing I saw and heard, Dax McCarty lost his mind this weekend in stoppage time in Salt Lake. And, had a backheel violent conduct situation where he lost it, and he knows he did. And he tweeted that. He had a long video on Twitter you can go listen to, about 2 minutes, basically apologizing and say, hey, I talked to Bodhi and I apologize for that. It's not excusable. I accept whatever punishment is coming from me. And, in the moment I was heated and I didn't think and I didn't do the right thing. It's in a bad example for, basically everybody, including myself as a leader. So I thought that was good. And then the other one, Chris Whittingham, I don't know It's like a sixth grade biology teacher saying the P word, the PIM 15 club on the Univision English. That he just it, like he just came out and said
word? It. Is yes, the P word?
I don't know.
It, can't you say you, it?
When I say PIM,
it's a scientific
when I
say word PIM, for it.
Right. Penis. He said he just came out and said it on the broadcast.
Weavey is such a child right now. The way he built into that and then said it.
We don't even say like we don't even say old. We don't even say that word at our house with our boys. Like they say this is the sort of time that you're supposed to switch over to the anatomically correct like verbiage. But we've said goo-goo at our house for since the beginning of time. So, you know,
for that?
Yeah, for that.
That's what you call that?
Yeah, goo-goo.
Interesting. Well, most of the parenting books I read are written by Chris Whittingham, and he says that you're ready to switch over.
Go straight to it, baby. I'll have to play that.
It's basically going. It's just basically hitting the SAP button.
Yeah exactly.
I'll
have to just
right
play
over.
For Cameron and Wyatt that little clip from the Univision broadcast where they so deftly explained where the ball hit him, and that's where it hit him. So, all right, let's get to our biggest takeaway from you, Doyle. From the week, and of course, go check out the Armchair Analyst column. It is a must-read every single Sunday night/Monday morning. What's the big one, Doyle?
Jesus Ferreira. He had a hat trick and an assist on Saturday night against Portland. He was devastating against this Timbers team, and it was his first goal of the year. He had been playing well. He had been linking up play. This Dallas attack has been playing well. They hadn't been turning it into goals, and thus hadn't been turning it into points at the level that you would expect from a team that's playing this well, but man, did they do that on Saturday night? This first half, especially, they were just rampant, ripping Portland apart. And what makes it interesting from not just a hey, here's a you know great player, great young player, great homegrown player doing well, is that it's very applicable to what's to come for the U.S. national team this week, because Greg Berhalter sees Jesus Ferreira as someone who's obviously very much in the mix as a starting center forward for his team. He started the Honduras game, was it? Last one? No, or did he start the El Salvador game, the win over El Salvador?
Yeah,
last window.
The first game.
And he plays as kind like I say it's a false nine. I know that Berhalter quibbles with that designation. I assume that Ferreira does as well. And, you know, Nico Estevez, who is Berhalter's former assistant for the U.S. national team and is now Dallas's head coach, probably doesn't want to call it a false nine. It's probably just a different style of number nine. But whatever you call it, that different style of number nine is what the takeaway is, because Jesus Ferreira is not the way he plays that role. He does not sort of live between the two opposing center backs and try to create that inch of space that, you know, traditional strikers need in the bot, like the way that Brandon Vasquez did this weekend. He does not necessarily like he can do that, but that's not his primary function. His primary function is to come back into the play and try to drag the opposing center backs with him, create disorganization in that back line via that type of movement, and then quick decisions with his passing and his touches as he comes into midfield, which then releases the wingers into the attack, either to become playmakers or to, you know, get goals themselves. And we saw all of that from Dallas this weekend with Alan Velasco. Paul Areola was team of the week worthy. He's, I think, leading the league in expected assists through four games. And it's just like, it's exactly what I think Greg Berhalter wants to see from the national team, with Ferreira coming back, creating a bit of instability and disorganization in the opposing back line with his movement and his touches, while at the same time, Pulisic and Wea or Brennan Aaronson or Gio Reyna, if he's back, Jordan Morris, if those guys, whoever's in the field, those guys take advantage of that space and that disorganization and the ability to go 1v1 in the way that Velasco and Areola did this weekend. So, like, if you're a Dallas fan, you watch it and you love it because, like, this is your DP homegrown getting it. You know, he's probably going to be player of the week. And that's wonderful. If you're a national team fan, you should watch it because, like, this is how it's supposed to look. This is how Greg Berhalter wants it to look in any game Jesus Ferreira starts. And it doesn't necessarily mean Ferreira finishing the plays off, but the disorganization, his movement, and his ability to sort of toggle from, okay, I'm the goal scorer in the box, to I'm the playmaker in the midfield, the disorganization that causes is what he wants from the position. And it was the first time all year that we saw that. All year that we saw that lead to a bunch of goals against a team that had actually been pretty good prior to this defending.
Now all we need is Tata Martino to call up Jose Van Rink. He's eligible. Then it all works.
It is really fun to see him sort of drop into that space and then make the other team react and see how they react to him in different stages. Like after he gets the first goal, Timbers, and you wrote this in your column, and they have to change. And that's sort of the whole point, I feel like, of playing him in that position, is that he makes decision-making really difficult for back lines and those sort of deep-lying midfielders. And once you do that and you have Areola and you have Velasco, two guys that seem to understand where to be, how to time runs, the space that they're getting into. You know, for instance, on the first goal, Areola makes a perfect run across after Velasco gets in behind from a great ball from Paxton, but then he dummies it. He knows that Ferreira is following that. And Ariel said after the game, he's like, we're still learning each other's movements, our patterns, our preferences. Like, this is only going to get better. And if it gets better for Jesus Ferreira, it might get really good. I know this is his first sort of box score contributions, 3 goals and 1 assist so far, and he's been all in this game. But he has been in these positions repeatedly over the course of a couple weeks, whether it be creating for his teammates and them not finishing, or creating opportunities, then being the runner and either not finishing or having a referee call, right, a correct referee call, take his goals off the board. So we'd sort of talked about it earlier in the year, and we said, who's our 2222 player presented by Body Armor going to be this year? And it was easy to forget that Jesus is eligible. Like, he is still in this bucket. And by the way, 21 goals now, he's just 3 behind his dad, which is pretty incredible for FC Dallas. That's a pretty cool stat at this age in this place. What is the potential of this attack, this team, to you, Dave? Because it's starting to click actually quicker than I thought it might. And in particular with Velasco, his integration has been, let's say, just a tad quicker than the normal David Goss theorem. But Areola seems to me, Areola seems to be like this piece that just is elevating a lot of the players around him and looks like a genius trade from FC Dallas.
Yeah, he seems to be exactly what they needed. And I think when you look at this group, you needed a guy who could sort of take some of the pressure off the young players to make their lives a little bit easier. And I think Paul Areola does that from a culture point of view, from a leadership point of view, from his background. But I also think then you see on the soccer field, he's picking up so many different spots. He's not staying out wide and staying isolated. He's coming inside. He's finding dangerous areas. He's flipped to the left side in the run of play. That's how he sets up O'Brien's goal in the first game. And he set up O'Brien a couple times, by the way, because some of these games they've had pretty high XGs, and if it wasn't O'Brien on the back post, they may be have 2 or 3, you know, wins so far this season. And he's been that perfect piece, and I think he has sort of expanded his game along with it, which you see why this works for both people, and you see why he kind of wanted out of DC to have this opportunity. But I also still go back to, I think being forced to play inside under Losada changed the way he sees the game and how he can affect the game. And so he's been that perfect piece. And then the other 4 guys you're talking about, right? Cerillo, Cervania, Paxton, Jesus. I've seen them do this for 5 years just from youth levels up. All these guys know how to play together. And what I love about Cerillo and Cervania specifically is at times they've been D-mids, but the expectation from FC Dallas of how good you have to be on the ball allows Cervania now to push higher up the field, Cerillo to rotate with them and be in more dangerous areas. All of them know what they want to do with the ball. All of them are clean with their touches. They know how each other's going to react. So now you're starting to see quick passing through the central midfield. Paxton Pomacol playing that blind ball down the left side. It's not just that he checks for Velasco. My guess is over the next month, he's going to have to stop checking because O'Brien wasn't making that run and Paxton expects it to be there. And so that's why I think Velasco is fitting in so quickly, is because his role is defined and there's not actually that much individual pressure on him. Just come in. Jesus is going to create chances for you. Paul's going to create chances for you. Paxton's going to pick up the ball and drive forward. That's all going to be there. The only question mark for Dallas high end is the back line. Can Matt Hedges play how many minutes this year? Is Nanu an answer at right back? Is anyone an answer at right back? And Pius, who's been good, is actually only on loan. So that's where the question marks come in terms of their ability to contend at a high level in the West, contend for the playoffs, all of that. But you are right. The attacks come together quicker than you would have expected. And it's pretty cool to see Jesus, as Doyle explained it all, a lot of what he's doing is similar to what he did last year. But to just have the soccer IQ at a young age to play the 10 for a team, and then they sell the 9 and move forward and play the 9. We've seen him on the wing as well in MLS. To have that soccer IQ, just be able to accept all those roles and still affect the game is impressive.
How about Paxton update, Doyle? I know that this is a player that you have watched closely over the years. I don't want, let's not get out over our skis here with Paxton, but it looks really encouraging so far.
Yeah, I think 3 of the 4 games he's been really, really good. You know, this game he was by far the best midfielder on the pitch. You know, and that pitch had Diego Chara on it as well. He doesn't quite look 90 minutes fit and sharp. I don't think he's played 90 minutes yet in any of these games. I think they, you know, this one they took him out with about 10 minutes left. Last week it was about 20 minutes left. But he, you know, if this is the level that he hits, this is an all-star in MLS. He had 3 secondary assists in this one. And, you know, he leads the league in passes into the penalty box. He is amongst the league leaders in successful duels. Like, all the stuff that we saw from him with the USU-20s a couple years ago when he was the captain of that team, or co-captain of that team that went all the way to the U-20 quarterfinals, beat France, all that. He checks all those boxes. He wins the ball. He doesn't give the ball away. He progresses the ball into dangerous spots. He's not a pure playmaker. I don't think he has like any sort of goal scoring instincts. But there's a lot of stuff that happens between defending in front of your own goalkeeper and getting the ball into spots so that guys like Velasco, Ferreira, and Areola can put chances away. And Pomacall does basically all of that. And honestly, I wish he was on the U.S. national team for this coming round of World Cup qualifiers, because like the U.S. is thin at the number 8 with injuries to McKennie and Eric Williamson. But, you know, if he keeps playing like this throughout the entire season and does become 90 minutes fit and 90 minutes sharp, like, he has a chance to go to Qatar.
All right.
Joel, I just want to say that I'm proud of you that you didn't call for this last window. Mm-hmm. But you waited, because I feel like over the years,
like the U.S. needs more good players in these spots, guys who can be ball secure and who can win you a game. And like at times that has not happened with this U.S. team.
But congratulations to Jesus Ferreira, our 22 under 22 player of the weekend, presented by Body Armor. And big props to Benjamin Reich, who hit us up with a photo. Says he took four people to their first MLS game this weekend. I think it was a sellout, actually, in Frisco.
Yeah.
And everybody said, we want to come back. That's nice. Awesome. Get some Pied Piper going, baby. Get some beers. Get some stadium food. Get some Jesus Ferreira goals. Get a Hattie in you. You're going to have
Street Patio Cafe if you've got time pregame.
There you go. A little pregame if you...
The Kellen Acosta special, Chicken Alfredo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, I forgot about that. We see him there, be like, we're the only ones here. What's up, Kellen? Real quick, you said the XG leader in MLS right now, Paul Areola, and I think it's actually Lucas El Arayan, but it also, while we were talking, I sorted for the XG leader. Who do you think that is?
I think you said XG twice.
Yeah, expected assist leader.
This is true Paul, media via Paul, stats perform.
Paul Areola has it by 0.02% over El Arayan. As for XG leader, I'm going to go with Brandon Vasquez.
He is third. Chicharito is second. And number one, according to True Media via Stats Perform,
Dominic Badi
is the god. Dab god. Derek Etienne. Derek Etienne, let's go. We'll talk more crew here in a little bit. I thought that was a funny note there. Let's talk Charlotte. Had to rock the jersey for him today. First ever win to get it at home against New England. You know, I'm not going to say it's predictable. It's a great result for them. New England coming off just the absolute gut punch. That was that 3 goals, then PK's exit to Pumas in CONCACAF Champions League. But let's narrow in on two things. One of the things is just how Miguel Angel Ramirez wants this team to play and whether or not they're meeting that threshold. And then the other, I think, obviously from this game is Karol Swiderski, Dave, because this is maybe not, or at least what we saw in this game from Swiderski is maybe not what I thought that they were going to get. And this is strictly based on watching highlights with Poland and in the Greek League, where he seemed more like an arriver in the box, somebody who needed service in certain areas and then was pretty efficient in those spots, rather than what he showed in this game, which was 0.05 XG, watch me find the bottom corner. You know, like, hey, shot from a crazy angle that I should not be able to finish against Earl Edwards, bang, off the post and in. Like, those are some real, we paid big money for this guy. These are difference maker moments, especially that first goal. I mean, the little turn at the top of the box, the left footed with the dip to have the bounce in the right spot to find the corner after a 17 pass buildup. And that is everything that you want your team to be if you're a Charlotte fan.
100%. And it's, I think the first name that came to mind this weekend watching him was Rui Diaz, a guy who does the things he does well at an elite level. And so, yeah, he's not going to pick up the ball, beat five guys on the dribble and create a chance like Vela does. But a quarter of a window for him is a full window for someone else to get a shot away, to take that clean touch. We sort of talked about
it. I have to interrupt, David. I have to interrupt. Anders is absolutely losing it in the chat. Absolutely losing it in the chat. Right.
We won't include the expletive, but Rui Diaz's
name out of your mouth.
The best part about this was, we were talking about him in the group chat on Saturday, and we talked about sort of what he's good at, and Anders says, that's not good enough for a DP in MLS anymore. And then in my head, it was Joseph Martinez, Chicharito, Rui Diaz, all those guys are those guys, right?
Yeah.
Chicharito doesn't build up for you. Nope. He doesn't create. Joseph doesn't really create most of his own chances. He's had some assists this year because he's had to. That's what all those players are. And I think with Swiderski, the thing that stood out to me, both when I was there for their opening game and over the last 2 weeks, is he's clean in his touch. There's no wasted movement. So when he sort of shifts left and then shifts right, he's able to move that little bit quicker than a defender. And if a defender's trying to jump him, he can react quicker and create the opening. And that's what you saw this weekend. I thought it fit well for him that Daniel Rios was on the field to take away some of the responsibility for him to float in. And what you see on Ben Bender's goal is he comes back and it's his layoff that launches TT Ortiz into the open field, and the layoff's perfection. The touch on the layoff is exactly the weight it needs to be so Ortiz can take it in stride and go into the open field. And so you're seeing all of that from Swiderski, and I think that's why you can be hopeful that Joswiak, who doesn't have huge numbers, you've got an option here. Just get to the end line and get him looks. Like, you don't need to create high percentage chances. You just need to find Swiderski in dangerous areas and he'll do the rest of the work. And that's sort of the right combination. As you said, that this is the game plan for them. They obviously always knew they needed more impact from the wings. That's why they tried to sign two DPs that fell through. Now you get Joswiak. Swiderski starting to find his feet. Remember, he didn't even train the week before the season, missed the opener because he was in Poland, came back after that whole thing, and it started to figure out this league, and it's only taken him 3 weeks.
How much of this, and I'm going to pick your brain on this because I've only thought about it a little bit, how much of this performance from Swiderski comes from the fact that he was playing up top in what was really more of a two, right? Because in the past 3 weeks, it was more of a 4-1-4-1 from Charlotte. In this one, it was more of a 4-4-2 diamond, and he got to play off of Danny Rios, who's more of just a true center forward.
When you look at players in this league, if you don't have the game-breaking speed, you don't want space. You want pieces around you to use. And I think that's what you gave Swiderski with Rios, was a piece to manipulate. Watching him take center backs, do you want to pop up in that space? Someone to play one touches off of. And then you had, I thought, a good amount of energy from the guys in midfield to get close to Swiderski and link up with him when you needed to. It was good to see Alcevar and Franco in there for the first time ever, because this is the first time both of them have started. Mm-hmm. And Brent Bronico's done work, but there's a limitation to his passing going forward. That was a kind way of me going about that. And so I think what you did see from Swiderski is taking away the responsibility and role that he had against the Galaxy in constantly being the one to make the run over the top, constantly being the one to push the back line and have to then drop in with two center backs on your back. I think when bringing Rios in there, you took away a lot of that responsibility and allowed him to find the game where he wants. And I think you also kept numbers around him when he needed it to be able to link up or use them as a decoy and go the other way. And so it fit really well for them. And my guess would be this was the idea because they brought in Vinicius Melo on a U22 deal, right? They've spent a ton of money at true center forward for an expansion team. We just haven't even heard anything about Melo. And it seems like this is probably Swiderski's best setup.
You wrote in your column, Doyle, that Charlotte so far as the metrics go, are one of the pressiest teams in the league.
Mm-hmm.
What's that mean?
That means they press a lot. It's like they do a good job of being organized and getting pressure to the ball upfield. It is too early to tell how much of that is by design and how much of that is game state, because they've usually been behind. They've spent most of their time on the field trailing, and teams that trail tend to press more. So we do need a larger sample size, but that number is in line with what we've seen of Miguel Angel Ramirez in his previous stops. What they haven't done is turn that into immediate chances. They've been a little bit slow at times in those transition moments. I think that's low-hanging fruit. If you can say, okay, when we win the ball, we're going to be more vertical. And, oh, by the way, we now have a couple of more pieces who are good at playing vertical soccer. And, by the way, we have two. We're playing with a two up top now so that we can win. We can play vertical and the pass doesn't have to be precise. It leads to a turnover or 50-50. Well, that's just another ball we could win higher up the pitch. So everybody buy into that. Do what the union do. That's a way that I think you can get more dangerous going forward in a big hurry. Though I don't know if that approach is 100% in line with what Ramirez is going to want to do. He really is more of a guy who wants to control the game with the ball. And what I'm talking about is more about controlling field position, whether or not you have the ball. So it's just something to keep an eye on. I still don't know exactly what this team is. Even this weekend's win, it's a data point you have to take with a huge grain of salt, given that 100%. The Revs were missing five stars. As Henry Kessler said on Saturday night's MLS After Dark, the Revs were missing five starters. And I will add, they had just played at 7,000 feet three days before and had no legs. And so Charlotte did a good job of taking advantage of that. But the Revs were there for the taking. And credit to them for doing the work. But, like, don't read a ton into it yet.
I have thought just early on their ability to sort of, like, get on the ball and play with purpose in and around teams with quick movement and some understanding is pretty early days for them and doing better than they thought, especially without the players and attacking sense they wanted. I also think every time I watch them that maybe they should have just spent the money on Paul Areola.
Uh-huh.
We just got done praising him a ton for FC Dallas, and reportedly they were like, ah, boy, the price is just a little bit too much for us. Feels like that would have been a good use of allocation funds, but we will reserve judgment down the line. But that might be one that Charlotte fans are thinking about for a while, being like, man, he really would have fit in quite well with us here. But congratulations to Ben Bender. Congratulations to Charlotte. One of the things that you don't want to be as an expansion side is boring. You guys have not been boring so far, whether it be Miguel Angel Ramirez saying what he really thinks about the state of the roster and putting pressure on the front office, to the results, to the crowds, to the fan engagement. So congratulations. Your first win in Major League Soccer. Savor this one. Time for human spirit to triumph in the Western Conference. You cannot stop Real Salt Lake. They will not let you forget what you thought about them in preseason, I'm sure. But here they are with 10 points from four games without some big-time players in the team. I got my Demir Krylak jersey over there. We haven't seen a ton of him so far. Nashville come to town. Salt Lake get two goals off sort of set-piece situations and then straight shut it down, and Nashville can't break through. Give me your early take on Real Salt Lake, Doyle. Like, Pablo Mascherini, quibble with his methods as you may, but the man is getting results, and clearly this team believes.
I don't have any quibbles with Pablo's method. I think he's been dealt a tough hand. He has no DPs on this team. He, you know, Demir Krylak is hurt. Aaron Herrera's been hurt. David Ochoa's been hurt. And he's out there getting results. And I'm going to read one of Pablo's quotes from the postgame presser. From my perspective, all the soccer stuff aside, if you don't have the right character and mentality, then we wouldn't have the chance. It's a game that's unforgiving, and you have to earn the right in these games. I could go through a list of things we didn't have, but I'll tell you what we did have: character and mentality. And I love that quote because it's raw as hell, right? Like he's seen, you know, the preseason predictions. He's heard, I'm sure, media, whether it's local or us or national media, say, like, yeah, RSL does not look like a team that is built to compete right now. And I'm sure that's bulletin board material. But it's the same thing that Jesse Marsh is talking about with Leeds. Did you see that interview with Jesse Marsh the other day?
Yeah,
Didn't talk about tactical changes or anything like that. Like, he just kept hammering, we have to have the mentality and the belief that we can go out there and win these games. And I write about tactics 4,000 freaking words. Every weekend, I write about tactics in MLS. And the dirty lie underneath all of this is that so much of these games, so many of these games comes down to who's out there playing their who is out there playing harder. And through four games, I honestly think I've seen RSL be the team that's out there playing harder. And if you have that as a foundation, tactics really do take a back seat. That said, Zach McMath is not going to play that well every single week. Like, he was absurd in goal. He's playing the best soccer of his entire life. He's, you know, in the voting for player of the week. I'm not saying he's going to win it, but like, it was a Dane St. Clair level performance from him. RSL have to button it up a little bit. If they're going to keep this up, it's not just going to be mentality. They need to get more talent through the door. They need to sign a few DPs, and they need to be a little tighter, not allowing teams to hit those really telling passes from central midfield that kind of opened them up repeatedly in this game. But Pablo's right. If you have the right mentality, you'll give yourself a good shot at fighting through that or coming back from, you know, 2-0 down in a snowstorm in New England. Those types of results that there aren't many teams in MLS capable of getting, and he deserves a ton of credit for that.
They do need more talent. They may not actually have to make signings to get there, because you could argue coming into the year, if you ask who are RSL's three best players, all three of them have not yet appeared Krylak's been out, Herrera just came off the bench this weekend for the first time, and Ochoa still not available for them. So the talent internally will improve no matter what they do, and Krylak's injury history is incredible. I think since he's debuted, he's basically started 30-plus games every year except COVID in 2020 and the 1 year when he got pushed out in Germany and came to RSL. So it's not really expected that he'd be here. And RSL, so they fought through that. They fought through ridiculous travel, ridiculous weather, right? They played in a blizzard and a 2.5-hour weather delay, and they were still able to come back in both those games and get victories after those moments occurred. So everything Daryl talked about, it's been to the nth degree with RSL. And I'd say to a point, it's sort of been the DNA of this club. I mean, they've been competing with a hand behind their back for a while, and they're never a team that you turn on and say they gave up or they didn't try. I think a lot of that comes up through the academy at this point. The guys who have been there, I mean, my guy Taters, 2 match winners in a week. Give me that, Taters. Like, Andrew Brody coming back from Austrian
Taters,
fourth division. Calling this
man, he's accepting the nickname Taters. Yeah,
it's all class. And I think you've seen it sort of from the top down. And obviously, it's been impressive so far. Is it sustainable? I don't think it has to be, I think is the point, because the talent will come there both internally, and we've heard from the ownership group externally. And so I think that will help pick them up, as maybe you'd expect them to sort of fall down, and a guy like a Zach McMath wouldn't have the same performance, or Scott Caldwell struggling. Well, now you bring in Everton Luis, you bring Cordova in, you bring Aaron Herrera in, can you bring Cuellar in, guys like that, to maybe help lift them at moments when you'd expect an MLS team to sort of drop.
And Bobby Wood scoring goals. I know that was someone we didn't see a ton last year. Was sort of like, does Bobby Wood still have it? And I think there's probably still some open questions about that in terms of a volume perspective. But just physically, he looks different this year than he did last year. And just from a math standpoint, what you said, math is math earlier in the show, Doyle. For them, through four games to have 10 points, they're basically a fifth of the way to what you need to make the playoffs in a seven-berth playoff system in the West after four games. So it doesn't matter how they got them. Doesn't matter that there were snowstorms, they came back in New England who are dealing with something else, or you know, whatever it might be. Doesn't matter that Nashville are on this road trip. Like, for Pablo, they just got to get into the playoffs, and we saw last year what happens when they get there. The expected human spirit works pretty well there as well, even if you can't take a shot. But like, to pick up 10 points from four games immediately gives them an element of freedom, I think, and an element where they can have some times where they're like, well, the XG didn't go the right way this way, and we didn't get the result. Like, getting fortunate now gives them runway in the future. And to be atop of the Western Conference and to be telling this story after all the stuff that they've been through over the last couple of years, it's got to feel hugely cathartic for them. Because it's not just Pablo who's sort of in like a second chance situation. A lot of guys on this roster are like second chance type of guys. Even Demir, you just talked about, he got pushed out of Germany. Bobby Wood, same sort of situation there. You know, across the board here, whether it be guys that came up through the academy, came up through Real Monarchs, whatever it be, this is not a team where you're like, oh yeah, this is just like tier one dudes. It's all guys that can truly buy into what Pablo is selling, and you can feel that, one, they know what they're doing, two, they're committed to it, and three, bumps in the road are probably not going to derail them.
Yeah,
probably not going to be a team that loses a couple games in a row and just packs it in and is like, well, we're effed. Like, guess it wasn't meant to be. I just feel like this is one of the, I'm not going to say that they're like, hey, they're going to be in the top four at the end of the year, but I just don't think you're going to watch Real Salt Lake and think, ah, oh, they gave up on this. Ah, this is too much for them emotionally or like psychologically. And in this league, in any league, it's a pretty important attribute to have through 34 games. A lot of crazy stuff's going to happen. Anything to tack on here? I mean, anything on Nashville's side?
The fact that they still stink defending set pieces is the weirdest thing in MLS. And we know this is a super weird league, right? Like, this is maybe the weirdest soccer league in the world. Nashville's a dominant defensive team from open play. They're easily the best in the league last year. Underlying metrics, one of the best in terms of just raw goals allowed. They have a very good keeper. They have, you know, always two, often three aerially dominant center backs. Gary Smith likes to play with a big target striker. So that's a fourth guy who could defend set pieces at a high level individually. We know Anibal Godoy, Dax McCarty, Sean Davis are all, Daniel Lovitz, Alex Muil at this point, they're all veterans who know what it takes to scrum for a 50-50, whether it's on the ground or in the air. This team should be airtight defending set pieces. This should be like one of, if not the very best team in the entire league defending set pieces. They stunk last year. They were terrible defending set pieces last year, including and into the playoffs, where it helped knock them out. That's okay. We'll fix it in the offseason. Through four games, they've given up five goals. Three of them have come via set pieces, including both in this game. One just directly off a corner where Bobby Wood trots to the near post unmarked and gets a free header from 6 yards out that he's a professional forward. Of course, he puts it on a frame and he buries it. That's one. And the second one, your guy Tater is at the back post. That was a recycled set piece. That was a set piece that it was cleared okay, and then Nashville just fell asleep, man. And they let the left wing back sneak back post and get a one-time rip that, like, Joe Willis couldn't do anything about that. I don't care that it was five-hold. It is the weirdest thing that this team that has so many ingredients that you would point to and say, they're going to kick your ass anytime there's a restart, just gets murked every single week from dead ball situations. If they figure it out, they're MLS Cup contenders. If they don't, I mean, they'll still make the playoffs, but they might not get a home game.
It's so interesting because Daniel Rios said this week in Charlotte, he was talking about the difference between Charlotte and Nashville. And he sort of brought up that in Charlotte, there's more of a focus on like, okay, how are we building with the ball to attack? And in Nashville, he said the focus was so much on 11 players, you know, attacking players included. How are we organized? How are our defensive principles coming through? How are we preventing chance creation at every single moment? And you see that in the system from open play for Nashville. Everybody understands what they're doing. They're extremely hard to break down. They push you into areas you don't want to be and where they can defend comfortably from. And you're right, Joel. It's so strange that from a, you know, this is like a specialist thing, right? Like you can practice this. You can have instances, you can have like truly a robust set piece only sort of game plan to fix some of these issues. You can go back and look at all that tape. So it's just kind of baffling that we are in this position once again. And Walker Zimmerman said last week, if we give up bad goals like this over and over, we're not going to be where we want to be. And this is not where they want to be. And that's why you see, you know, Dax frustrated at the end. That's not where they want
to
be.
To be clear, they were also elite in chance creation this week. And they have been a couple times this season. It just most of it.
Did you see the Daniel Lovett's first time ball?
Everything fell.
The first time shot.
Yeah.
Oh my God! The first time shot over the little Hani Mukhtar chip in behind that he bangs off the post. From a technical like chance creation perspective, I was like, "Who is this guy?" Like, Charlotte need to sign him to play left wing for them. That is unbelievable. Anyway, let's move on here. How about Brandon Vasquez? This year's Brian White. 4 goals, 2 last week, 2 this week. FC Cincinnati have a winning streak. That's what's up, man. When they flashed to the bench after he scored one of his goals and you saw Pat Noonan dapping up
Kenny Arena and Dom Kinnear,
I was like, oh, this team's going to be so much better just on people that know the league and will, like, we talked about the mentality with RSL. Well, like the opposite was true in Cincinnati, right? Mm-hmm. It just felt like crumble FC, like, hey, a little bit of trouble, and we're just going to fall down all over ourselves. It feels like they flipped that switch. Now, competition, you've got to ask some questions about that. Inter Miami or no, they might have that gene, that crumble gene at this point. But Brandon Vasquez is a player, man. He's doing a lot of things really, really right, dude.
Yeah, and he's kind of always done some of those little things well. He just has never finished before and gotten himself those opportunities. And now you've got the pieces around him that can sort of take advantage. Matarita, a threat down the left side, Lucho playing at a high level underneath him. And I'm sorry Kalen's not here this week because it's another Dom Baji game. Dom Baji just gets in spots. He's an effective MLS player. It's not pretty. It's not exactly YouTube real quality, but it's always there and it's always effective. And Vasquez then, again, doing it. He should have had a couple, I thought, against Austin in the opening week. And since then, he has found his chances. He's finished confidently. I mean, start with the fact that he's carved out of stone. Dude's like 6'3", just built, can run, can cover ground. And so from an athlete point of view, this is what people have been waiting for. This is why he got to Cholos in an academy setup when they were one of the best groups at promoting players through in Mexico. It's why he was a U.S. Youth International. It's why Atlanta United was excited about him and why other teams were competitive about trying to get him off that team when it looked like he wasn't going to get playing time there. Like, there's always been this interest in him because he has all the aspects. He's a good technical player. He's an unbelievable athlete. He sees the game pretty well. And now you're starting to see him get comfortable and, you know, it all come together and think about what Brenner can be off of him. Like, he has been the final piece at the point of the spear at times, but he likes to come underneath and create a little bit. And he's smart in his layoffs and he's smart in finding his teammates. And now give Brenner the opportunity to sort of just hunt chances off him. It could be pretty impressive. And I think there should be a ton of excitement for Cincinnati. This is a clash of the Titans this weekend against Charlotte FC. 2 teams coming off massive wins as expected.
Swiderski, Vasquez.
This is what we sell.
Miguel Ángel Ramirez, Pat Noonan.
Get me Hans Zimmer in the background right now.
Yeah, that's some good stuff there. Enjoy that. We won't talk about Miami here. We just can't do it. Like, we already beat this drum, man. Quick takes here. We'll keep this thing rolling. How about this, Doyle? Dave and I talked about it last night, but we said we would grade Austin on sort of this Cascadia swing after they had those 5-goal performances. How do you grade the Cascadia swing that they had? Lost in Portland, 1-0, but had a good performance. drew 1-1 against the Sounders and were pushing a ton of like crossbars, joints of crossbars and posts. I mean, they were testing the Sounders, and props to Stephen Cleveland for standing up tall.
Yeah, I give him a B, maybe a B minus, because they only got 1 point out of these two games. But these are, you know, two of the better teams in the league. I think we all kind of agree. They're better at the stuff that they were good at last year. Ring is freer pushing into attack, and the defense doesn't just completely implode when he does that, which is good. They're better at chance creation. I like both wingers, though neither is dynamic enough on the ball to really make the most out of all the space that they get. I think you could have, like, they don't complement each other, right? Like, both guys are clearly, Diego Fagundes and Cecilio Dominguez, both guys are clearly starting caliber players, but they don't, like, one of them has to just be able to annihilate you off the dribble, and neither do. So that, like, that limits them. And then the other limiting factor is their center forward play. You know, Maxi Arruti is busy, and he will link passes in the buildup, but then he's not super goal dangerous in the box, and his shoot pass calculations can sometimes be very wonky.
Math is math, Doyle.
Math is math. If you don't shoot, you don't score. Therefore, Musajite, like, he gets into good spots, but he's one of those guys who you worry about, just like he's never going to figure it out in terms of finishing. So
he just looks surprised when the ball comes. Like, he looks surprised. I don't know how to better describe that. He looks like, oh crap, it's there. As opposed to, like, you see guys who score a lot of goals in those sort of like positions in and around the 6 and the 18 who are, you know, Wando-esque, like expecting it. Okay, here it is. My body position is right. I know sort of in a general sense how to do it. And if I'm, regardless, I'm just going to make clean contact. It just looks like it jumps up on him where it's like, oh, ball's here. Oh, flail. Like, that's not what you want.
I mean, yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. So what I will say is that they look better, and I think they're going to end up with 10 more points than, or maybe more than 15 more points than last year's team. They're going to show real progress in how they play. They're not going to be an easy mark defensively, I don't think, like they were last year. They're not going to score enough because the talent isn't right in their attack. It's fine. It's just not, like, they'll probably need to reassess what to do with those DP slots and those U22 slots after this season, I think.
I mean, Rodney Redis would be one I would throw out there as, you know, what do you get? What's the ROI so far? But hey, 1-1 at home against the Sounders. Sounders rotated a little bit. A lot of conversation about, was Christian Roldan off on his goal? I think he was on. We went on instant replay and did some detective work on that one.
Did you get a better angle?
No, we didn't, but we pieced it together from multiple angles of where the players were at contact of the pass.
Look at the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
And it looks to me like it looks
here.
I know, FBI. Detective hats on. Sherlock Davies. Okay. I'll put it on Chuck. It looked like it was just a well refereed moment from the crew, and we didn't have an angle, and it looked on the live angle like he was definitely off. But if you piece it together and show where the right back is compared to where Roldan was when the pass was played, at the very least, even and probably about a foot or two onside. So, either way, Sounders and Austin 1-1. Philadelphia go to NYCFC. This is another post CCL result here, and win 2-0. Union didn't need the ball in this one. They generally don't want or have to have the ball to create good goal scoring opportunities. Daniel Gazdag gets another goal. He's rolling right along.
Who picked him in the Golden Boot race?
Hey, you know, I appreciate that, but I had Gonzalo Higuain, who scored from the spot this week. So we all are getting benefits from our choices, right? Like,
we should do five more. We should do five more around.
Okay. All right, at the end of the show, five more. Draft out the rest of the league. So, Union got some playoff revenge. Congratulations to them. But here's the question I want to ask you guys after 4 weeks. Who has the most to worry about? Which teams are looking at their results? All right, explain. We talked about the Fire. Fire win 3-1. We didn't say who they beat, really. They beat Sporting Kansas City. Kansas City down there at the bottom Not all the way at the bottom of the Eastern Conference, but in an uncomfortable, relatively unfamiliar position for them.
Yeah. Alan Pulido's out for the year. Shalloway and Russell were out for this game. Gadi Kinda is still out. What is Kinda's injury?
I can look it up. It was from the preseason, so they knew he'd be out for about a month plus.
Yeah. Like, that's a lot of high-end attack missing. I'm sure, like, I suspect that Shalloway and Russell will be back and will be good. I don't think they'll be as good as they were last year. It's really hard to hit that level 2 years in a row. So that's one worry. Worry number two is that, like, they still don't have a D-mid. Remy Valter was okay last week filling in. This week he was a turnstile. And I don't really blame him because it's hard to play that position in a new formation. Like, they went to five at the back, which Peter Vermees never does. It didn't help. And then the elephant in the room is that, I mean, Andrea Fontes was awesome last year up until about early September. And then he was okay. And then he was pretty bad.
I will stand for no Andreu Fontes slander. The man takes his children to the same park that I do. God. You know he was my defender of the year last year.
He was my defender of the year last year too. He was so good for that team. But he's in his mid-30s, and he's not a super quick guy. So the thought was, okay, well, once Izumat Marin gets healthy and plays next to him, they'll complement each other and they'll have that chemistry. They'll be able to cover more ground and put out fires that were turned into blazes with last year's team. Izumat Marin might not be that guy. He has looked uncomfortable defending anywhere upfield. He's okay in the box, but he can't really scramble that well in transition. He doesn't take away space. And you know Fontas, for all his gifts as a defender, he needs a partner who can do that. And the trade-off has been like, okay, they let Ilya walk. Ilya was Fontas's partner in center back, in central defense for most of last year. And the bet was, okay, with those two guys, like, yeah, we can't defend in transition at all, but we'll control the game with the ball. We won't make mistakes. And that worked really well for a good chunk of time. But now they don't even have that option. It's tough. You know, add on top of that Graham Zusi is not in his prime anymore and is showing. Tim Melia had a shocker this weekend. He's not in his prime. You know, there were a lot of red flags with his underlying numbers last year. That's gotten worse through four games this year.
Yeah, these were, you could see the frustration for Melia. These are two goals where it's like right through him.
Yeah.
Just right through him.
I expect him to bounce back and be a pretty good keeper for the rest of the season. Sporting might need more than pretty good. And this is a team that's like, they're just really old at a lot of spots. And it looks like three or four of those guys have maybe hit too old at the same time. And they're not going to get 35 goals from their wingers again to bail them out. And they don't have their DP center forward all season long. And they still don't have a D mid on this team. And like, that's a long list. And I still bet on Peter Vermees to figure most of it out. But even figuring most of it out might just push this team to the fringes of playoff contention rather than being the Sporting Kansas City that we've known every year since 2010, with the exception of one.
And everything Doyle said, I agree with. And I think it's all the ceiling of this team. But how often did they lose the possession like battle last year? And I don't think it's all down to Ilya. I think some of it is the game plans that they're using so far. It doesn't feel like they're looking to dominate the ball.
They've been on the road three of the four.
Sure.
That's context.
And the Atlanta game, they kind of, you know, got run off the field pretty quickly, and then they started to piece things together. But you just look at this team, and every piece that's in the team are in there because they're decent in possession. No one's in there for other reasons, right? Felipe Hernandez, Remy Walter, all the options they've brought in at center back and left back besides EC Montmorin. All these guys are in the team because you're good in possession. Dominate the ball. There'll be a ceiling to what you can do because you won't be able to beat Seattle like that maybe in the playoffs. Maybe you won't be able to do it to LAFC, but you'll win games week in and week out and you'll be competitive, and they were not competitive this weekend. And then if you're just not playing to your talent, then I think that's a problem. But I do believe, as Joel said, I think they'll get there and they'll be competitive throughout the season. Even with Brian Wright and Ryan Gauld out, it just felt like we went back in time with Vancouver of just being toothless. And it just felt like there was no avenue to generate chances. They're not able to control midfield at all. So everything has to be in transition. And outside of a few moments from Dahomey, there is no fluid attack.
Positive and negative,
yeah, 100%. By the way. There's no fluid attack. The ball, dude. And it's felt that way the whole season.
The ball.
The whole season, it's felt like, where will chances come from? And there's no one who's beating guys 1v1. There's not a ton of quick movement with the ball to get into spaces. It feels close to a Mark Dos Santos team, which I think maybe Mark Dos Santos noticed on Sunday night too, because he was super happy to be on the LAFC sideline, it looked like, at the end of that game, and not on the other one. And so that's a little worrying to me, because I think a decent amount of what happened last year was momentum, confidence, culture, all the stuff we talked about with Pablo. And if that's gone away, is the pure talent there? And is Vanni Sartini a guy who can find different answers now that it's a different challenge? I'm not sure about that. I think you've obviously taken a step back in goal, and that's not a knock on Thomas Asal. It's just a reality. I think the back line's been worse, and Florian Youngworth just has to be a starter for this team. Whatever you think of him as a player, they play their best when he's in there. The central midfield, they have no answers and they have a million options. So that's worrying for them. And then you look up top, and I think I've been too harsh on Cavallini this season. He looks fitter. He has been involved in a lot of the good things that have happened for them, but he's not a DP center forward. And Brian White, it'll get better. But at some point, five games into the season, if a guy's not healthy, you got to be worried about how much you're going to get out of them. And so I think for Vancouver, they've taken steps back. And I thought part of their advantage this season was that they would already be ready to go, similar to what we talked about with RSL, to pick up points early, to get ahead. And then maybe you start to have issues. You have something to fall back on. Now they have to chase again.
Definitely chasing. What about Montreal? They're down there at the bottom of the East. I know we can point to CCL, but...
Bro, I'm never going to worry about a team that has Ismael Kone on their squad. Get out of here.
Really big positives. I was just going to say, Ismael Kone into the Canada squad, just a legend. He hit the bingo board this weekend of like every possible action that he could have. But then also you're up a man and you draw a game that you have no business of ever dropping any points from. And you got to look at Sebastian Breza at the end of that game. I texted the group chat. He was flying this weekend. I was like, what the hell is that? Dave, you want to blame it on the wall.
I still think it went through the wall. I've watched
that. That was like a sinner cut. That was a sinner cut free kick from way back. Like, Brooks Lennon didn't even hit that thing with pace. Brooks Lennon didn't believe that that was ever going to go
poorly. It goes through the wall. You are a wall.
If it goes through, he can see the ball the whole time.
Wait a minute. That's not how you set up a wall. The point is not that you can't see it. The point is he's shaded to one side, so that the wall covers the other side.
The ball didn't go to either side. The ball was in the middle of the net.
But okay, continue.
Mostly the middle quadrant.
No, he hits it through the wall. The purpose of that is so that he doesn't have to cover that space.
Wow.
But he does poorly. I don't disagree with that.
You're a wall apologist.
Yeah, for sure. Clearly you're on the side of, I don't know who was in that wall. They're not good at it. And they probably shouldn't be anymore.
I'm not giving the wall any credit here. I'm just saying.
I would say this, though. The biggest issue to me about what happened with Montreal was they could have killed the game off. Up a man. They had moments in transition. They were lazy. They were tired. Fine. But it just felt like they felt like the game was over. And they didn't have to put the final nail in the coffin. And it's a pretty inexcusable way to play a professional soccer game, especially on the road against a team that will probably be a rival for the playoffs. Overall, not worried about Montreal. They don't have the depth to challenge, I think, in two competitions at a high level. I think they pushed it, a lot of their resources towards CCL. I think they'll be fine in MLS. not only do they not have the resources, they especially don't have it now. Like, they've got a ton of injuries that they are dealing with. But I actually, I like what I've seen for the most part from them in terms of the progression of their soccer ideas.
Like Kansas City, 3 away games of 4. So you at least have that side
and
of things.
Two trips to Mexico. Well,
at least we're giving up points away. We'll talk more Ismail Kone, I think, tomorrow. Speaking of collapses, should we talk about the Red Bulls, Doyle?
Sure.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yikes. Looks like the crew had just blown it. They killed it this week as far as chance creation. Jesse Zardes had, I was between him and Sebas Ferreira for the worst miss of the weekend. Ferreira had a header in the six wide open that he let hit his shoulder and go over. And Jesse was wide open and like just decided to outside the boot with the right. And all he had to do was put it on frame. But
tried to be slick.
Didn't matter.
Tried to be slick.
Didn't matter. Didn't matter in the end. Red Bulls get a pinball own goal. They're thinking, we're going to take another 3 points at home. We're rolling. And then how do you explain what happened in stoppage time to let Darlington Nagbe and the crew go the entire length of the field?
I mean, every goal to one degree or another happens from a cascade of errors, right? A cascade of less than optimal decisions and individual failures and, you know, on the other side, good team play and all that. This one, it starts with Ashley Fletcher. You know, getting the, it's the 95th minute, 94th minute, I guess, when he got on the ball, and he's on the in the corner of the box, and rather than play one of his teammates in, because I mean it's Columbus throwing the kitchen sink at it this late in the game, he had a chance to play a teammate in, have a shot, or just take it to the corner, draw a foul, try to earn a corner kick. One more thing to see out the game, and he did none of that. He danced on the ball at the side of the box, turned it over, and then it's off to the races. And then from there, the collection of failures from the Red Bulls to turn this into a crew goal was spectacular. Like Christian Caceres pushing up to press by himself despite the clock and the game state and just completely whiffing on a tackle. Luquinhas jogging behind the play. It started with Gerhard Struber subbing Frankie Amaya off, even though Amaya had been like maybe the best player on the field for the Red Bulls in this game, like covering everything in midfield and winning the ball everywhere. And that opened up a gap for Columbus, who were playing with 10 men because Zela Rayan had been subbed off, or not subbed off, taken off with an injury, and they were out of subs. That opened the gap for Columbus to charge upfield literally 110 yards or 120 yards, however long Red Bull the pitch is there, go from one end line to the other and create a scrum in the six, and Darlington Nagbe taps home. They deserve credit, though. Jesse Zardes made two separate runs just in this sequence that were devastating to New York's shape. And then the other one was the patience Luis Diaz showed on the side of the box to wait for the overlapping run. I've never seen Luis Diaz show any sort of patience. If he showed patience at all, given his gifts on the ball, and it's like he would be one of the best wingers in the league. He's never, literally never done that before. So it was really well done by the crew to take advantage when nobody on the Red Bulls shut any of the doors that were just sitting there waiting to be shut throughout this incredible and inexplicable sequence of events.
I thought you were then going to say, and then Darlington Nagbe made a goal-scoring run, which he never does.
Well, here's the thing about that, too. If you go back and watch the play, the Red Bulls had numbers. And then there's two crew players that come out of the midfield untracked to go back to guys jogging or making tackles that should not be made. And that's what changes it. That's why the patience pays off, because those two additional numbers, Jesse pulls the defense around, and all of a sudden the crew have numbers, and they're running at pace into the box. The ball arrives, it bounces around, and Nagby's faster than anybody else. Like, you could just see the sort of the frustration, the just disbelief on the Red Bulls players at that whistle of like, my God, what did we just give away? But it was completely just in terms of like run of play.
Yeah, the crew, obviously, we said had those huge chances, but over the course of 7 days, the Red Bulls play two good home games and walk away with 1 point. That's like not a way to win in MLS. So I think there's a ton of frustration there, as you said, at the end of the way they reacted. You'd expect this is now a situation where some guys started the season well, but now Luquinhos probably gets pushed into that starting lineup. Maybe Tom Edwards Clark, at right maybe? Back and not playing the back five as much, because I don't think you saw a ton from Dylan Nealis. And I thought Lewis Morgan actually looked pretty poor out there. It just isolated him at a time when he looks really good with pieces around him centrally. So I think this might cause a couple changes. I thought Struber's comments at halftime were pretty telling on the MSG broadcast of it was slow. And like that's the opposite of the DNA of this team in possession. Everything was slow. They allowed Columbus to recover. And it's a Columbus team that normally leaves gaps in transition. And that's what the Red Bulls want to hit. And they just weren't capable of doing it at a high level. I will mention Giassi misses the chance. The chances he got were opportunities Miguel Berry wasn't even close to. So I'll be curious to see how Caleb Porter handles this, because he said Berry earned the spot. Obviously, Giassi didn't finish in this one. But when he's come off the bench, they've been better. Is that a game state situation, or does that go down to the player and the individual?
We talked about it last night. We won't do the whole Giassi trade thing again. I would be shocked if they trade Giassi's artist. Be shocked. Given the context around the club and missing the playoffs after MLS Cup win in a strange year, I don't know that they'll extend him, but unless they get blown away, I'd sort of be surprised that they make a move. Maybe they got somebody on the end of the line. We'll see. A lot of decisions to be made in Columbus, but a point that felt better than maybe it should have. They should have won this game. Some quick ones around the horn here. Colorado Rapids, don't think we didn't forget about you screwing up in managing the end of a game. What are you doing? Like, you get your set piece goal on the road in Houston, and it's just like, hey, man, just, you know, dust it off. Finish this one out. Don't take a goal kick into the chest of a Houston player in your own half and allow a counterattack to come the other way. Tyler Pascher. For the draw, for the Dynamo.
Are we going to talk Canada at the end of the show or no?
We can do a little bit. If you want to throw something in, just toss it in right now.
This is the quote from Mark Anthony Kay today about why he sings the Canadian anthem so passionately. He says it makes a hell of an experience and an atmosphere. I'm proud to be Canadian and proud to have an opportunity to put on the jersey and play with a bunch of great guys. So why not sing it properly? If you ever watch their games, he is full-throated. I don't know. That just got me pumped. I'm stoked that these dudes all love each other and are having fun, and it's a lot of people that heard no a lot and there was no expectations, and now they're all good.
We got a couple of Canadians playing their way into John Herdman's plans to at least a degree. Your guy Ishmael Kone being one, but Raheem Edwards has 100%. Been awesome this year. Tyler Pascher coming out and scoring a goal in this one. I mean, it's MLS is the League of Canadians, man, dominating.
I mean, at this point, we're all basically Canadian. Yeah, any Canadian that wants, you know, when we talk about the Canadian national team,
I will be rooting for Canada very, very hard on Thursday, because if they get a point against Costa Rica, that anyway, back to MLS.
Look, then we'll finish it off. Toronto FC won their first one under Bob, I believe, and Taxi Fontas is going to arrive immediately for DC United. DC lost 2-1 to Toronto Galaxy. Losers to Orlando City at home. Facundo Torres, El Cuervo, the Crow, gets his first MLS goal. Well done for him. Galaxy have some questions they got to answer about where the finishing touch comes from, so to speak, if it's not going to be Chicharito. Luis Almeria keeps chipping away at his goal debt in Minnesota. They beat San Jose 1-0. San Jose, worst in the league on XG, both scored and conceded. So things are going very well for Matias Almeida. A little game of chicken between him and the front office in San Jose. Like, do I want to be here? Do you want me to be here? Does anybody want to be here? What's going on right now? And let's get to the mailbag. 412-060-MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Of course, we will do all the U.S. national team, Canadian national team, World Cup qualifying, and CONCACAF talk in the record we do tomorrow and release on Wednesday. So look out for that on your podcast feeds. I believe, Dave, we have a perfect segue into an email about Canada. Yeah.
Michael Clark emailed in. He said, looking forward to the club and country watch along post game shows. Can you please have a Canadian on the shows who'll be watching the Canadian game? I appreciate Goss being an honorary Canadian and trying to give us some love, but he will understandably be focusing on the USA Mexico and will only be able to catch the highlights and key moments from the Canadian game. Please get someone on that will be watching the Canadian game who can speak to the tactics of Herdman, the swings in momentum, and other storylines beyond what is seen in the box score and highlights of the goal. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate that email, because I've been saying the same thing over and over again. If you do want a little Canada coverage, not little, a sizable amount, MLS Today had Michael Singh on today. So you can go listen to that podcast. We broke down the roster, what it means for the country, the effect that they've had, Ismael Kone, all the storylines around this team. And I think maybe we'll have a full Canada watch-along show on Sunday.
Yes, we'll have a full Canada-only watch-along show for that Jamaica game at home at BMO. Right now we have Toussaint Ricketts locked in, so you get a little legend there from the Vancouver Whitecaps. We're working on some others that I will not name now, but hopefully be naming in the future. Player to be named, player slash coach slash GM slash CSO slash legend to be named later. So yeah, we'll have a full, just me and Dave and some Canadians, baby. Just watching
it. It's going to be a celebration. It's going to be cool. It sounds like everyone's going to BMO for this one. And they seem ready to take what they've been waiting for quite a long time, for Atiba since the day he appeared 45 years ago. Can I close out on Brian here?
Sure.
So Brian Schneck.
Is Atiba the Perry? No, I'm not going to do it. That's a KU basketball joke that nobody should
Perry
be
Ellis?
To.
I got it, though. You didn't even have to say his full name, and I got it.
Brian Schneck says, am I alone? I do not care that the Revs blew a lead and got knocked out. I laughed when I was convinced NYCFC were blowing it. I assume most fans care about their club success and not MLS success. Silverware and other clubs' trophy cases does nothing for me. My hope is that MLS does win CCL when Columbus takes it home in 2023. I can't be the only one.
Yeah, but you got the Campione's Cup, right? Or did they lose that game?
No, they won.
No, they got the Campione's Cup.
That's what I thought. Yeah, you got the Campione's Cup. So you got some
MLS is dominating Campione's Cup. Everyone knows that.
Yeah, you're CONCACAF.
Brian, I would say for a lot of the feedback we get, you are not alone. Many fans feel this way. I think that's a shift that's happened over the last 7-8 years, right? 2013 with RSL, it didn't feel that way. 2015 with Montreal, I think a lot of MLS fans wanted an MLS team to win it. They felt like Montreal was this upstart.
Those teams
underdog.
They don't have the same storyline as like Seattle winning this year would, right? Like RSL was this sort of perennially underappreciated team that wasn't necessarily thought to be at the same level and had like a, you know, the first of in the modern era run. And it also had the power of media behind it. Our guy Scott Riddell. Everybody watched the, like, you remember what was the show called? Where he, like, followed along. He was behind the scenes with RSL. That created some
buzz.
Some, like, emotional groundswell of, like, oh, okay, like, these are likable guys trying to do something unprecedented. I'll get with that. And then Montreal was just, they weren't that good in MLS. So it was like, oh, yeah, we'll root for the underdog. Like, Frank Klopas is out here thrusting on Pachuca. Like, hell yeah, that's dope. Like, love that. Who's Cameron Porter? What the hell is he doing? Like, I don't know. There were some unique parts to all of that. We'll finish this on Doyle. Patrick White, let's pretend MLS is bringing back MLS shootouts. Among active players, give me the three guys that you would want shooting in a must-win game.
Among active players?
Active players.
So active it's tough players. To do. Do you know why?
What kind of player would you want?
Well, this is what I'm steering you towards. There's only one person, only one player in MLS history who took 5 or more shootout attempts and was perfect.
You know this off the top of your head?
I'm not going to say off the top of my head, but you know, people have been, our friends at The Athletic have been doing a lot of work on shootouts. Pablo wrote a story on it a year ago or so, and John Mueller wrote one a couple of weeks back. So the data's out there.
One person.
So go ahead. Only one player.
I feel like it's like probably something stupid, like a goalkeeper.
Was it Valderrama?
So Carlos Valderrama was one of the very worst history at shootouts. He was 0-for-4.
Nice.
I feel like the type of player I would want is a Jaime Moreno type. Yeah.
He was good. So the average conversion rate for MLS on those shootouts was 45%. Jaime was over that. If Jaime was 11-for-20, he was not, however, the best high volume shootout taker in MLS history.
Is the best person a person? Is it like a center back or is it someone?
So I'm going to answer Weeby's first. Tab Ramos was very, very good. 7-for-9. Okay. That's excellent.
It doesn't surprise me.
It's
guys with like quick feet who can unbalance an on-rushing goalkeeper and be quick.
Fifth best all time.
Oh, wow. There's
among
better.
Players who have more than 5 attempts. Fifth best conversion rate.
Winalda,
no.
Echeverry?
Okay.
Another U.S. national team forward from that era is second best. another U.S. national team forward from that era whose last name begins with W is second best.
Roy Wagerle?
Correct. 6 or 7. But he's okay, not
who was
the best.
Number one? Who was number one then?
Do you want to guess some more? I will say that Eastern Conference.
Okay.
I will say that the two obvious guesses
Preki
for high volume shootout takers who would be excellent are correct. Weeby just said one. Preki was 17 for 27.
And Echeverry's the other
one? Yeah, that one.
Echeverry's the other one, 17 for 25. Those are the guys I would look for. I would assume a guy like Reynoso would be awesome.
I think Zellerayan would be really good.
Zellerayan would probably be really, really good. Carlos Vela would probably be excellent.
Yeah.
But that's not the that's none of those guys are perfect. There's only one guy who's perfect.
Oh, we still didn't get it.
In a million years. No, you're not going to get it in a million years.
Severese.
Nope.
Well, we're not going to get it, so it's not like a Golden Boot winner. It's not
Roy Lasseter.
No, he just said you're not going to get it. It's not going to be that.
Oh, okay. Give
Pat
it to
Noonan.
Us. Give it to
Pat Noonan. This the shootout was before
Sorry.
Pat Noonan.
I meant to say Steve Ralston.
Chris Henderson. Chris Henderson for Tampa.
Chris Henderson
or Kansas City
did not rate. I don't have him in my numbers right here, but he would not have been perfect. The only perfect shootout conversion. Shootout taker was Carlos Llamosa.
Oh, wow.
Five for five.
So it was a defender.
Okay. Yeah.
It was a defender. It was literally a center back who he might not have ever scored an actual MLS goal. Llamosa was a really good player, but this shocked me. The other guys in the top five, Imad Baba, who you probably don't remember.
Nope.
It was 11 for 13. He was a legendary high school player. He was like parade All-American, maybe player of the year. It was supposed to be the next big thing. Never really translated it. Then Josh Keller was 4 for 5. Then you have Tab at 7 for 9. Miles Joseph.
I was going to throw, I was going to say, yeah. I feel like I watched a game with those guys during the pandemic where there was a shootout and they were talking through that of different like strategies. And it was Tab, it was Miles Joseph, and it was Severese. That was a blast.
There is one current MLS coach in the top 20 in terms of conversion rate and one in the bottom 20.
Head coach?
In terms of conversion rate. Head coach, yeah.
I'm going to say Peter Vermees is in the bottom 20.
It's correct. Peter Vermees was only 2 for 10. Though, it needs to be said, he did score one of, like, maybe the all-time most bad shootout attempt in the 1996 playoffs, where he took the ball from the ref, Essie Bahamas, and he says, "If I shoot, we win." And Essie says, "Yes." And Vermees walks up, takes it, and converts it. It was dope. That's an MLS deep cut, right?
Is Oscar Pereja the top five?
No.
Greg Vanney?
Not top five, top 15. Oh. Not Greg Vanney. Though you're getting warmer.
Robin Fraser?
Okay.
Robin Fraser, 5 for 7.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. All right. How about this? I'll finish this. Who's this player walking up asking the referee if I make it, we
it's
win?
Obvious, but.
I'm saying who you putting your money on in the current MLS.
The issue is the
current. Henry Kessler. Henry Kessler, 100%.
Yeah, but Henry's going to take Henry's going to run and take the ball from that guy and throw it 100 feet in the other direction.
What's frustrating about the reality that there is no shutout is it would have extended El Seno's career another 6 years as a shootout specialist.
Oh, yeah. He would have been the best of all time. Him and Vicente Sanchez
playing till he's 70.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I'll throw out
Efra's a good one. From Anders.
Efra's a super good one. That's a good
I was thinking Jaden Anders, Nelson as well, of young players who are able to beat a defender or beat a goalkeeper and
Jaden Nelson, when we were doing this, I was looking up 1v1s, most 1v1s this year, and percentage wins on 1v1s. Jaden Nelson is right now fifth in the league with 25. His 44% win on the 1v1 take-on percentage is not that great, but Yeah,
there's right some there. Toronto FC fans who would like him to release the ball a little bit sooner when he gets into those situations.
All right, well, you know, we did an extra 15 minutes on something that I thought was a throwaway question, but ended up being the most fun part this of this felt entire
like,
show.
This felt like one of those, like, literally 2 years ago during the start of the pandemic, we were probably yes. having doing this exact same show.
We might have. Yeah, it might be a replay here. All right, that's it for us. Remember, we'll be back on Wednesday with a preview for this entire World Cup qualifying window for CONCACAF, US, Canada, all the big names. We will put them under the microscope. We will have an interview on MLS Next Pro with Charles Alcheck, who's leading this thing, and then Ollie Curtis, who's leading the sporting side, on Thursday to replace our normal show. And we have the watch-along with DeMarcus Beasley going down during the U.S.-Mexico game on Thursday night. So Twitch, YouTube Live, we'll be there with you. We'll be live for 4 hours on Sunday for those matches, and then we'll be there with you experiencing the craziness of the final day on the 30th as well. Enjoy your week, everybody. We'll see you real soon. Adios. We'll be right back.